I'm going to go through kind of a roll up the sleeves, nuts and bolts on what's lobbying and most emphasis on what's not lobbying, and really frame how can we do advocacy as public health leaders and use the right kind of money to do the right kind of talking to the right kind of people at the right kind of time. So I'm wondering if we could just do quickly, name, and are you state or local? If you're state, just tell us what state or what city you're from. But if you're working at the state level, or if you're nonprofit, academic, just so we know who's in the room. And can we just quickly go through and speak so everybody can hear you?
No problem. Nicole Mayer, University of Illinois, Chicago, and I'm a student.
We already know this, Nicole.
I'm Felicia Crosby, University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences, and I'm an MPH student.
Okay, students. Great. Go ahead, quickly. Great. Great. Let's go around and then up front. Great. Well, welcome, everybody. Get a sense of lots of students here. That's really pretty exciting. Well, this will be a little bit academic, not too much. I'm hoping that it's mostly really, really practical. And if any of you have had challenges on knowing what to do and what can you say and not say with different kinds of money, raise your hands and let's talk through. I'd love to have this be as pragmatic and practical for the needs that you have in the field as possible. We all have to put in something. I have no financial anything to disclose, no financial conflicts. A little bit about Change Lab Solutions. We're a nonprofit organization. It's Change for Social Change, Lab for Laboratories of Democracy, and that's a concept out of the law, really emphasizing how state and local governments are where change happens, and let's experiment with what works before we bring anything to the higher level, and much of the work that we do at Change Lab Solutions is at the state and local level. And then we create practical solutions for the common good. That's our theme. That's our mission. And we work in a health and all policies context. So I have a multidisciplinary staff. Where most of our professionals are attorneys, but we have land use planners, architects, transportation planners, housing specialists, people that work in all aspects of civic life. And our goal is to inculcate public health into all these various aspects of life. And we create all sorts of, I think we have probably the largest library of model tools, model legislation, model contracts, resolutions, we use the tools of law and policy to impact public health. That's our mission in life. We assess opportunities, we strategize solutions, we create tools, implement the planning and help communities sustain progress. So our largest funder right now is the Centers for Disease Control, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the California Endowment, CRESG, kind of the usual players. We've worked in all 50 states and with communities, red state, blue state, huge cities, tiny little rural hamlets, you name it, we've been there. The law is different everywhere. The political attitudes are different everywhere. Our goal is to speak to the whole country and not just to the tried and true public health advocates. And it is challenging. And one of the challenges that comes up over and over again is, are we allowed to do lobbying? And if so, what does that mean? And there was quite a scare that went through the public health workforce a couple of years ago with the communities putting prevention Prevention to Work, the CPPW funding, and members of Congress saying it was use of federal dollars for illegal lobbying of state, local, federal agencies and politicians, and that this was illegal, could be treble damages, criminal charges could be brought against state and local public health agencies, and I was like, my God, I was just trying to do my job, and now I'm, you know, all these charges are coming at me, so it was really scary time. Very recent history, so I want to unpack some of that for folks so you know where the bright lines are and what you can and can't do. This is another disclaimer. I am a lawyer. I am not your lawyer, so I'm not going to be giving any legal advice here. I'm going to be giving legal information, but not legal advice, and I can't give legal advice, and if it sounds like I'm giving legal advice, you're wrong. I'm not. So I have an obligation to say that. This is what we're going to talk about today. What is lobbying? And this is a very technical, defined term. What are the common restrictions on lobbying, both for philanthropy dollars and for federal dollars? And federal, it's often state. I'm going to talk about federal law, but state and local law is generally the same. What are the exceptions to lobbying? What's not lobbying? Really, really important to know, because so much of public health is in the not lobbying bucket. And then we'll do some examples and Q&A, but because we're small enough, I'll take Q&A as we go along. So this probably looks familiar. This is Dr. Frieden's pyramid of what really matters for public health, and we'll get the biggest bang, the biggest impact on population health if we work at the bottom levels of this pyramid, which are the socioeconomic factors, poverty, education. There's no two things more important than poverty or education, housing. Really, that what we call the social determinants of health are in this bottom rung. And the next rung up, changing the context so that the healthy choice is the default choice. This is smoke-free environments. This is portion size controls of sugar-sweetened beverages. What is it that we're doing that the healthy choice becomes the easy choice? And when we work at these levels of the pyramid, we invariably are working on legal issues and public policy issues. With poverty, housing, education, it's all shaped by public policy. So we have to be, if we're going to be strong public health advocates, we have to be touching on laws and policies in some form or fashion. It's just baked in to our work. I want to talk about the L word. What is lobbying? There are two, I'm missing a slide that I wanted. There it is. How come I didn't see that the first time? First Amendment. I want to start with the First Amendment. Freedom of speech is part of the First Amendment. And we are allowed to lobby. We are citizens of this country. Lobbying is protected as a form of speech baked into the very First Amendment of our Constitution. These are the Bill of Rights. These are our rights as citizens, is to be able to petition government and seek redress. That's the language. That's another fancier way of saying lobbying. So we are allowed to lobby as citizens, as government employees. There is Johns Hopkins, Sharon Fratrioli at Johns Hopkins School of Public Health has just done a 50-state analysis of state law around lobbying, and in no instance are government employees in any of our states disallowed from lobbying in their private lives. And her research shows that most state and local government employees feel like, oh, I work for the state, I work for the city, I'm not allowed to lobby. That is not true. You can't do it on government time, and I'm in a nonprofit organization. My staff, I mean, most businesses don't allow you to do your private business on business time, whether you're public or private. You have to do that on your private time, and just because you're a government employee, they cannot take away your First Amendment rights. You are allowed to lobby. All of us are allowed to lobby. We are allowed to seek redress and petition the government. And we can seek redress on things that are controversial and not everybody agrees with. All right, so what's lobbying? There's two kinds of lobbying, and I'm going to go through this relatively quickly. I'm going to keep the emphasis always on what's not lobbying, but you can't know what's not lobbying until you feel grounded in what is lobbying. So there's two kinds, direct lobbying and grassroots lobbying. So direct lobbying, listen to this, is a communication. What's a communication? It can be an email, a phone call, sitting down with your legislature. It could be sending petitions. A communication with a government official. Communication, government official. A government official could be the elected official or anyone working for the government or working for that official that's engaged in developing legislation. So the legislative staffer that Nicole talked about. If talking to that person could be lobbying because they're, even though they're not the elected official, him or herself. Influencing, trying to get a particular view on a specific piece of legislation. Four parts. That's what direct lobbying is. I'm going to come back to this over and over again. You have to have all four. A communication with a government official or employee who participates in forming legislation, reflecting a point of view on specific legislation. If one of these elements is missing, it is not lobbying. You have to have all four. There's another concept of lobbying, grassroots lobbying, and it's really similar. But it's encouraging the public rather than an elected official to take action. It's encouraging the public. So here's a petition to the members of Congress. As concerned citizens, yada, yada, we just saw this on APHA. You could fill in your information, personalize the email, push send, and it goes direct. That's grassroots lobbying that APHA is engaged in. They're allowed to do grassroots lobbying. Nonprofit organizations can do all sorts of grassroots lobbying, $1 million worth of grassroots lobbying annually if they want to, if they have the right kind of money. It's distinct from direct lobbying because you're not individually yourself talking to an elected official or his or her staff member, but you're asking the public to do the same. Petitions, phone banking, email blasts that go out, all that, those emails we get from Donald Hoppert and Nicole is all grassroots lobbying. And we're asked to encourage the public, the membership of APHA, to take action to influence a specific piece of legislation. Grassroots lobbying, classic form APHA's activities. Remember, all governments and nonprofits are allowed to conduct lobbying activities, but they may be restricted by a funder or a particular state or local law or federal law. And if you have any doubt, you really should consult your legal office. If you have a city attorney, county council, whomever. At the end, I'll put up lots of resources on our website. Some of those resources are specifically targeted at local attorneys. They speak legal language for legal readers, and our goal is to get those people who can often be gatekeepers on what happens in local health departments to feel comfortable and confident in what you're doing, so we're speaking their language to them. But there's materials up there for all of us, and I'll put up a bunch of resources at the end and encourage you and or your legal counsel to consult with them. So common restrictions on lobbying. This is where, back up for a second. I talked about the First Amendment and how that's, baked into our Constitution. But there's different, particularly I want to look at nonprofit organizations, philanthropies. I run a nonprofit organization. We don't pay taxes. Our budget's about $6 million a year, and I don't pay a dime of taxes for that money. It comes from philanthropy. It comes from government. And for that privilege of not paying taxes, I abide by IRS regulations that establish nonprofit organizations. And what those IRS regulations say is that I may not use my philanthropy dollars for lobbying because I get money from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which is also tax exempt. And you can't get both the benefits of your tax exemption and use that money to lobby the governments that are giving you that benefit of tax deduction. And it's very similar with federal dollars. If you get federal dollars or if you're local and get state dollars, you can't use that money to go back to Congress and try to get more of that money for yourself or do more of anything that you want. You're not allowed to lobby with philanthropy dollars or government funding. You have to use other dollars if you want to lobby. And so I want to talk about these restrictions on lobbying and dig into them a little bit so you understand where some of the bright lines are. And the frank fact of the matter is it's a lot of rules. We're not going to go through all the rules today. If you really want to know a lot about all the rules, I want to encourage you to go on our website. And again, I'll give you resources at the end. We've got it all spelled out there. We worked with a law firm in Washington, Feldisman Tucker. They do wonderful work. The National Association of Community Health Centers is one of their big clients, the Head Start program is another big client. They really understand our world. They're experts in it. Their resources are on our website, and they could give you attorney-client privileged information. If you have questions or your legal counsel do, I could recommend them. There's others, but you can go to them. So philanthropic foundations, 501c3s, that's what we're often called. The use of funds for lobbying are likely to be restricted. It will say, and one of the things I'm going to encourage you to do as a best practice is, if you're receiving any philanthropy dollars, is to read the contract. Almost invariably, it will say that you may not use these funds for lobbying. Now, if you don't have to take the money if you think that's an unfair restriction on what you're doing. But if you take the money, it's a contract. You're saying, okay, I'm not going to lobby because they're not allowed to have their dollars used for lobbying. So review your contracts and be aware of how those funds may not be used. If you're an organization, I don't know that I heard any of these, like the American Cancer Society or the American Public Health Association, that has membership dues or donations that go to them. Those dollars are fair game for lobbying. I bet APHA gets money from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. I bet APHA has federal contracts. None of those dollars are doing the grassroots advocacy that you'll see Nicole and Don pushing out. They're using our membership dollars for that activity, and that's fair game. These are where I give money is unrestricted, and APHA can do what they see fit within their charitable mission with those dollars, and they will do their lobbying with those dollars. And so some of your best friends in an advocacy campaign on the ground are American Cancer, Heart, Lung, Diabetes, all of these organizations that do walk-a-thons and donation drives because those dollars can be used to do anything that fits the mission of that nonprofit organization. Very, very flexible funds that can be used for all sorts of activities. So if you're engaged in coalitions, make sure that you've got partners in those coalitions that have flexible dollars or volunteers who have time in their spare time to go to the city council, because from time to time, lobbying will be needed. You just have to use the right kinds of dollars to do it. Federal grants, I'm going to dig into a little bit. In general, grants from federal government agencies prohibit grantees from using funds for either direct or grassroots lobbying. We're going to talk about the exceptions to that. Exceptions are your best friend. It does not prohibit grantees from using non-government funds to conduct lobbying activities. So you may, if you are a local government and you get some funds from your general fund, your city council, I live in the city of Berkeley. guess who just passed a soda tax? Hey! Our city council was all over that. They voted 9-0 to pass a soda tax, and they put some city money into having that happen. It was general fund taxpayer dollars into the city of Berkeley that they decided to use for this purpose. So they also got, you know, I wrote a check, other people wrote checks within our private lives to support that, and there was loads and loads of volunteers doing the door knocking. But the city put some dollars in. They had the right kind of money that they had the authority to direct, and they did. But this Appropriations Act, 503B, does this sound familiar to anybody? One person, two people. Okay, so we got a relative number of newbies here. This was the crazy language that was inserted in federal appropriations during the Communities Putting Prevention to Work. So let me back up. CPPW was stimulus dollars that were put into play in 2009 when the economy crashed. Highly controversial. Red state, blue state, different sides of the aisles beating up on each other, and CDC got about more than $600 million, and a big chunk of those dollars went into chronic disease prevention, both tobacco related diseases and obesity related diseases. And the use of those funds were with community coalitions, the best public health practice, community-based coalitions, and looking at changing and addressing the social determinants of health. And in some instances, that was by looking at local laws and improving those laws for better health outcomes. Kind of bread and butter public health activities. And this is what made some members of Congress, particularly the appropriators in the House of Representatives, just crazy, saying that this was an illegal use of federal dollars for lobbying. And we know that you cannot use federal dollars for lobbying. So they put in, and I'm only going to capture part of this, an appropriations rider, only a part of it here, and a part of it later, and you'll see some red, which means caution, caution, no, 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 and then I'm going to put in some green language, which is the exceptions of where you're allowed to take action. So no part of any appropriation contained in this act or, guess what, 4002 of Public Health Law 111-148, that's the Prevention and Public Health Fund, our best friend these days, right? They baked it right into because this is right after the Affordable Care Act. It was all happening at the same time. Affordable Care Act passed, CPPW dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars going to state and local government agencies. No part of this appropriation shall be used to pay the salary or expenses of any grant contract recipient. All right, so here we go. Designed to influence the enactment of legislation, appropriations, regulation, administrative action, or executive order proposed or pending before Congress or any state government, state legislature, or local legislature or legislative body. I will say that one of the big, big changes in this language was the local level. There's no other appropriations for any other federal set of agencies. Here it's health, education, and labor. The appropriations are all done together. But no place else that Congress has ever tried to say anything about local government. Because you've seen one local government, you've seen one local government. The structures of how state and local governments, local counties, they're so different around the nation that for legislation to go in and start talking about local government, this is unprecedented at the time. So let's unpack this a little bit. Designed to influence. That's trying to have, you have a particular opinion that you're pushing. Legislation, appropriations, regulations, administrative action, executive orders. And who can't you target? Congress, state government, state legislatures, local legislatures, legislative bodies. Pretty broad, pretty scary of what you can't do. But you know what? You never were able to do this with federal funds. This caused a big ruckus at the time because they changed language. It had been stagnant for decades, probably. But really, you've never been able to lobby with federal funds. But the real key is in the exceptions to lobbying, and that's where I want to dig into. So we know we can't use philanthropy dollars for lobbying, and we can't use federal dollars for lobbying. But remember what lobbying is. A communication with a government official or employee, I'm going to come back to this again, you've got to know this, who participates in forming legislation reflecting a point of view on specific legislation. If you don't have all four of those, you are not lobbying under federal or federal funds or with IRS funds. Let me just say as an aside, the federal appropriations law is very separate from IRS laws. They're two separate bodies of law. General Accounting Office is coming out with what's called a super circular. This is maybe too much in the weeds. They're going to blend these two standards into one standard. That comes out in about a month. So basically I can say this is lobbying regardless if you're on philanthropy dollars or federal dollars. If you're not doing one of these four, you're not lobbying. So educational campaigns that explain the advantages and disadvantages of public policies. Why is this not lobbying? So it's not directed at a legislator, right. There may not be a specific piece of legislation. It's a communication, yeah. And it's about public health issues. But if it doesn't meet one of those four prongs, it's not lobbying. Sharing best practices and success stories with a public or governmental official. It's communication with a government official that's expressing a point of view. No specific legislation. How much of public health practice is right here? How much do we really care fundamentally that our elected officials know what the best practices are, know what the science shows drive to the best health outcomes? This is really what we're about in public health, is educating. And this is not lobbying under any definition, whether it's the IRS or federal appropriations. So all of your work can easily be wrapped up into sharing best practices, success stories with the public or government officials. I strongly encourage anybody who is getting prevention funds right now to not lobby and share your success stories. What are you doing with those prevention funds? If you had CTG dollars or CPBW dollars, Community Transformation Grant dollars, they're gone. Thank you to the House Republican Appropriations. We have to, if we're going to protect these funds, we better be doing this, and this is not lobbying. They have to know what you've been doing to improve constituent health and save money to the government. They need to know it now. I mean, yesterday, 2 weeks ago, the day after the election, right? We are going to lose those dollars unless you educate them about best practices. If they think preventing Ebola is good public health, then let's prevent obesity and tobacco-related diseases, too, and every other chronic disease. It's the same good science and best practices, regardless if it's an infectious or non-communicable disease. Coalition building amongst governments, nonprofits, private sector, community members to discuss problems and share ideas. This is not lobbying. We can look at all the options. We can decide what's best for our community, look at the science, do our needs assessments, analyze where our challenges are, where our opportunities are, doing our asset assessments. All of this can be done. Absolutely essential to do strong public health. It is not lobbying. Broadly sharing evidence-based policy approaches, including model legislation, to improve healthy choices. Change Lab Solutions develops model legislation. We've got dozens and dozens of model legislation looking at chronic disease control. We do this with philanthropic dollars. It is not lobbying, because we are giving models of what could be done. We're capturing best practices into a legislative template. After it's introduced, or if you say you should introduce this model licensing ordinance for healthy food retails, if you're saying this should become a specific piece of legislation, you started to lobby. But to say, here are the options that we have, here's some model language that's ready to go, our city attorney could look at this right now, you guys can consider if it's good for our community or not, is not lobbying. Other allowed activities, educating the public about personal health behaviors, communicating to the public about health risks and their consequences, working with private sector organizations for voluntary policy changes, getting if you're preempted from working on tobacco control, smoke-free, clean indoor air law, if you can't do that at your local level because your state preempts it, you could ask voluntarily for businesses. Many are going smoke-free anyhow because it's so much better. They'll see that in the states if you have a multinational or a national business in the states where people aren't allowed to smoke, how wonderful it is, and they adopt it voluntarily as business policy, even in those states that it's not required. All of this, the vast majority of what has to happen for public health is not lobbying. And if you need to lobby, you need to have the right kind of dollars, the right kinds of volunteers at the table with you. So again, keep saying, I'm coming back to this over and over again, that lobbying must have all four elements. Otherwise, it is not lobbying. And there are exceptions to lobbying. So even if you have all four of these issues going on, there are exceptions built into the law that allow you to cover all of the four elements of lobbying and still not be in violation of either IRS regulations or federal appropriations. And I want to talk about those. For the IRS regulations, nonpartisan study, research and analysis, and invitations to testify, and I'll walk through each of those. So nonpartisan analysis, study, or research on policy alternatives or specific legislation that may express support for a specific policy. Here's what nonpartisan means. It's independent, balanced, and objective. Fair to both sides of an issue. Contains a full and fair exposition of pertinent facts so people can make their own decisions. Allows the reader to draw an independent opinion or a conclusion on your own. It's fair and balanced. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? Conclusion is based on evidence and facts, but not on unsupported opinion, and broadly distributed to the public. So a lot of the work that we do at Change Lab Solutions falls right into this bucket. We try to find out what are all the things that we could be doing about obesity prevention. We'll look at the pros and cons of land use policy, transportation policy, tax policy, all these different options that we have out there, and look to where the science, the public health science is pointing. We'll say, yeah, some people object to this because it's unfair to small businesses, but here's what we found with that. People know what the opposition is, and then they can draw their own conclusion, and we draw a conclusion based on the solid evidence. And it has to be broadly distributed. You can't just give it to one side of the aisle or the other. And, you know, I'll tell you, in this day and age with everybody's got a website, put it up on your website, and it's anybody has access to it. This used to be an issue back in the day before websites, and if you're doing house visits and you only went to one side of the aisle and not the other, you could be saying, you know, you might not fall into that broadly distributed. But if you put it up on your website and maybe you send out an email blast that it's there, that's broadly distributed. Anybody can get it. You don't have to have special credentials. You've met that prong. So even if you're talking about specific legislation and weighing an opinion on it, if you base that within a nonpartisan analysis and study and talk about the opposition to what your conclusion is the best outcome for public health, you've got to put that other stuff in. You're allowed to do that. That's an exception to lobbying. We want those facts and that information out for public discourse. You know, there's been a lot of concerns about, just going back to the First Amendment, corporations have, you know, speech rights now, and really what the Supreme Court is driving at is not limiting speech, but increasing speech. They want more speech. This is a kind of speech, and as long as it's balanced, you can do it. Examples of nonpartisan model ordinances for sugar-sweetened beverage taxes. If it's based in a nonpartisan analysis, you can be working with that. Shared use agreements, the contract language on opening up schools or other government facilities for after-school use, new school financing toolkits, results of policy scans that you might have done. All of this is nonpartisan analysis. One of the things that we'll do is go into state or local law, see what's on the books, compare it to public health best practices, come up with a list of recommendations of how this community or this state could improve their public health laws. That's a nonpartisan analysis. Because it's based on science, it's comparative, people could disagree. another exception to lobbying. So it'll have all four prongs, but not be lobbying if it comes at the request of a government or legislative body asking for technical or assistance or factual presentation of information to decision makers regarding specific legislation or legislative proposal. I bet directors of health departments, state, local, directors of specialty nonprofit organizations engage in this kind of work all the time, and I want to dig into it because it's a really important exception to lobbying. The key question, is the request related to a proposed specific pending legislation? Yep, it is. Is the requester involved with the legislative process, such as drafting, sponsoring, voting, commenting? Yeah, the answer is yes. Can this person provide a written TA request under the IRS rules? Aha, bingo, this is what you need. Because you'll be doing a communication with a government official, expressing a point of view on a specific piece of legislation, those four prongs, but if you fall into the exception of a technical assistance request, you're okay under any of the rules. And here's what a request needs to have. It has to be written. On behalf of the government or legislative body, request information and recommendations and the response from the, whether it's the head of the health department or whomever, will be available to all members of the legislative or government body. It's not, will you come into my office or talk to me on the phone? It has to be available to all members of the legislative body. So here you can see an example. It's on the letterhead of the state of wherever. So it's coming from the head of this legislative committee, let's say. And it's a request on behalf of the Transportation Housing Division of the new state finance committee, on behalf of the committee. You're going to have both sides of the aisles, all five sides of the aisles, whatever you've got in your state, will be sitting there. It's on behalf of all of them. Come and present your what you think about what we should be doing about tobacco control, about Ebola, about obesity prevention, about any public health, fluoridation of the water, you name it. You can talk about it you get that specific request, because they want the best evidence so they can make the best decision on behalf of the residents. What you can't do with government or philanthropy dollars is cherry pick who you talk with. You have to go to the whole committee. We do a lot of technical assistance to state and local governments, not so much in the committee, but to their staff members. And if they've got specific legislation that they're looking at, we'll get a specific request in writing from the head of the health department asking for that. So on behalf of the entire, somebody who can sign for the whole department, not just, you know, a health educator in the tobacco control section who's been on the job for 2 weeks. It has to be somebody who can speak for the whole department. Yeah, question in the back. Yes, yes, for the whole committee.
Yeah.
The whole committee looking at that specific piece of legislation or the specific issue of what do we do about sugary drinks or something like that. It could be highly controversial, it could be routine, mundane. The last session I was in, big deal in some states on helmet law. My state is like ho-hum. But, you know, huge issue someplace. And could they, you know, you've got the health director talking about head injuries and, you know, every Harley driver in the state there, yeah, it could be. And that health department person can talk about head injuries and all the science and the best public health practice. And yes, I do think you should pass the helmet law because it would save a lot of lives. That can be said if you've got the right written request on letterhead on behalf of the whole committee asking for an opinion on a specific subject. Yeah. No. This is testimony in front of the entire committee. So it usually comes from the chairperson of the committee, who has the authority to act on behalf of the committee. So the chairperson. So this would be testimony, you know, in a legislative session to, if that the committee chair invites you to come and testify at. So that chairperson can speak on behalf of the committee, and you're speaking to everybody. Often people record, you know, they hand in a letter that goes into the public record too. That's just kind of good practice, not essential that you provide your testimony in writing, but it's generally that happens, and it is good practice. Okay, so that was with IRS dollars. With federal dollars, I want to remember I said, oh, I put some stuff in red, and you'll see what I said. The red stuff is in the black stuff up ahead. But I said there'd be some green lights, so you can't do any of this, you know, requests from Congress and state legislatures about appropriations or legislation, regulation, blah, 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 all that stuff you can't do, except other than for. That's a longer way of saying except. Same thing. So this is a bunch of green lights. This is baked into federal appropriations law, what you are allowed to do. You can't do all this stuff except if you're doing this. Normal and recognized executive-legislative relationships or participation by an agency and officer of a state, local, or tribal government in policymaking and administrative processes within the executive branch of that government. Oh my God, I hate language like this. What does that mean? And believe me, I've been a lawyer for going on 30 years, and I saw this for the first time. I'm like, what does that mean? This is not what I would call plain English, and this is only part B of A, B, and C of 503, so believe me, it goes on even worse. Let's unpack this so we can understand what this means. What does normal, recognized executive-legislative relationships mean? Anybody have a guess? Just think about if you work in a local health department particularly. How many people here are a local health agency? Nobody left. This really means common sense. If you're... So think of the three branches of government. So do a little... civics lesson. Remember, we have the legislative branch, we have the executive branch, and we have the judiciary. So here we're talking about executive branch, legislative branch relationships. You're not allowed to lobby, blah, 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 except if it's normal for your health department to talk with the city council or the board of supervisors or the state assembly. If that's normal, then it's not lobbying. And what's normal in your state, what's normal in your local community is the answer to this. And I can't give you, there is no case law on this, there's no nothing on this. Everything we know about this, you are looking at right now. You have to decide what's normal. So let me give some examples. A county health department typically provides an annual state of the health report to elected officials with recommendations for legislative action. If that's normal, if that's the expectation that we have a state of public health report to from the Board of Health, from the health director to the city council, if that's normal, that's a normal executive legislative relationship, and it's an exception to lobbying. State legislative liaisons typically consult local health agencies about pending legislation. If that's normal in your state, then it's not lobbying. So the big factor here is what's normal. Normal and recognized executive legislative relationships is an exception to lobbying, and you can use federal funds for engaging in normal and recognized executive legislative relationships based on common practice in your jurisdiction. Now, this is a place, because it's undefined, because it's unclear, because the best I can put up there are some hypotheticals and a big question mark, that I would really encourage you to talk with your local council about. And make sure that he or she feels like, yep, we're on solid ground here. Participation in policy or administrative processes. Government officials may communicate with anyone. I'm sorry that gets cut off. within the same government about policy and legislation. This was the second one. So the Public Health Department, Land Use Planning Agencies, you're in the same level of government. Let me just back up to this. Look at that, the bottom. Policy making and administrative processes within the executive branch of that government. Public health and land use planning, transportation, housing are all executive branch. They're not legislative, they're executive branch. They can talk to each other all they want about whatever they want to do. It is not lobbying, whether it's philanthropy dollars, whether it's federal dollars. You can talk with your counterparts. Now the question comes in, and the real challenge comes in what happens if, like, I'm in the state of California, almost all of our health departments are county health departments. I'll give the example of Los Angeles, Los Angeles County Health Department. 87 cities in the county of Los Angeles. Are they the same level of government? Well, no. Some are cities and some are counties. But two of those cities, Pasadena and Long Beach, have their own health departments. There's no other health departments except the county health department, which serves as the equivalent of a city health department because there is no city health department. They have MOUs between each other saying, we, City Whittier, are using you, LA County, as our health department. We defer to you on public health matters and we'll consult with you. There's a big argument to be made there that it's the same level of government because there is a vacuum and you need to have a health department. It's required that there's a health department under California law. There's some public health authority. State of Hawaii, state of Florida, might be true in other states too. I think New Mexico. All local health employees are state employees. Everybody just works for the state, even though they're at the Kauai Health Department. They're state employees. Is that the same level of government or not? It's really tricky, and this is one reason why the federal government, federal appropriations, have never touched the local level. You've seen one local level, you've seen one local level. And so this is a place where you really do need to consult with your legal counsel on what does this mean for you and what kind of risk assessment would that legal counsel guide you towards. So here's some examples. A state health agency liaison may discuss legislation with the governor's office. Yes or no? What do you think? Same level of government, state health agency, legislative liaison, discuss legislation with the governor's office. Yeah. Plus, it's all the executive branch. It's not even crossing legislative to a county planner may discuss updates to the zoning code with the county public health department. Absolutely, same level of government. A city public health department employee may discuss specific legislation with a city manager. These are all yeses, all yeses. How about a city public health employee talking to a member of the city council or talking to the city council? If it's normal and recognized executive legislative relations, the answer be yes, that can happen. So I remember early on I showed this pyramid with rules, 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 rules. You can see how this gets a little bit technical. But what I want to leave you with today is that almost everything that needs to happen in public health agencies and in public health practice can happen with no worries whatsoever. When you do lobby, you have to use the right kind of money, membership dollars from APHA, or volunteers who are just citizens who are on your coalition who show up and care. I'll tell you, the soda tax in Berkeley was a huge volunteer effort, and that was great. Unions use some of their dollars because they're membership dollars too. But what happens if you think that you broke the law? And this, we had public health staff all over the country thinking that they were going to be brought up on criminal charges and thrown in jail or fined treble damages, three times the cost. It was craziness. First thing I want to say is don't panic. If you do something wrong, the worst that can happen is that the federal government won't pay you for that amount of time that you actually did the lobbying. Or the philanthropy will say, no, we can't cover those costs. You're going to have to shift them someplace else. You need to bill your time to a fund code that allows lobbying. government general funds. So that means you need, you know, you can't be using general funds without the approval of bosses and the elected officials. They have to say, yeah, we want to work on this. Back when I worked, I used to work for a county health department in California before I went to law school. And we were big. We were, my first job was tobacco control. We passed 18 cities in our county, the first smoke-free indoor air multi-jurisdictional in the country. And our board of supervisors was behind it, and I was on the dog and pony show, city to city to city, using county general funds to lobby the cities to pass clean indoor air. We could do that. I had the right kind of money with the approval of my bosses. If you're a nonprofit, you have to use unrestricted funds. That means non-philanthropic funds, membership dollars. This is why Cancer Heart and Lung and those kinds of organizations, APHA, are your best friends, because they can send paid staff being paid by these donations and membership dollars out to do the lobbying. Get a proper cost accounting system in place. If you wherever you work, if you're doing lobbying, in my office, we have a special fund code. If anybody lobbies, because we do have some unrestricted funds and we do some lobbying, we don't have much of that money, but we do some, we put it right in our timesheets. This is lobbying. We pay for it out of a separate fund. We have to keep your money separate, and that's your best defense if anybody comes and accuses you of doing improper lobbying. And talk to your legal counsel to understand the rules. Okay, so let's try another hypothetical. County Health Department receives a grant from the CDC for reducing tobacco use. May the Health Department develop model legislation for banning smoking in public places? Yes, they may. They really should pull one off of our website. Now, ours on tobacco is the California specific, but you could take out all the California references, and you could send it to all the cities in your jurisdiction, because it's not yet specific legislation. If they decide, yeah, we want to bring that in, then you're in a different. May the health department discuss the model legislation with county supervisors, with other cities within the jurisdiction. Yeah, you want to start paying careful attention here. If you're sending out to all the cities, here's a piece of legislation that we at the county are adopting. Maybe you already know that because you've got a champion or considering adopting. We want you to take a look at it too. You're right on the edge here. You're right on the edge. So you're going to have to fall into an exception if it's normal and recognized. If it's the same, wouldn't it be the same level of government? You got to pay attention. If it's normal that the health department, the county health department, say you're in California, talking to city elected officials, is that normal and recognized executive-legislative relationships? You're going to have to show it's normal and recognized. Otherwise, if you think you're too on the line for lobbying, you get your coalition members who can lobby to do that. And always having those coalition members at your side who have the right kind of money and the right kind of speech opportunities are your best friends. Good questions to ask yourself. What activities can I do without lobbying? Which laws or rules do I need to follow for my lobbying activities if I am lobbying? Are there any state or local laws that prevent me from lobbying? So you might have special rules that, you know, you can't lobby without the approval of the elected officials in your jurisdiction. That was certainly the case when I was a county employee. I couldn't do whatever I wanted. If it was lobbying, it had to be approved by the Board of Supervisors. In my case, it was, but otherwise, I can't be doing whatever I want. Does my funding include a restriction on lobbying? You want to be able to answer all of these questions with a clear answer at the end. If you engage in lobbying, maintain accurate and detailed records that distinguish between your lobbying and non-lobbying activities. This is funding records, records of how you spend your money. Standard time reporting is sufficient. You don't need anything fancy. We just have a little line that says these hours are used for lobbying. Lobbying's allowed unless there's specific restrictions. Restrictions on lobbying vary based on the type of funding, the contract language, state and local laws. There are many allowable activities regardless of lobbying restrictions, and it's important to consult your legal counsel. And here's a bunch of resources. If you go onto changelab.org, that's our website, do the search for anti-lobbying. And there'll be a whole bunch of materials there, FAQs with typical fact patterns that are found in practice, guidance documents. Some of them are almost unbearable to read. The first time I read one of them, it took me 4 hours to get through. I guess, and I'm a lawyer, and it's two lawyers. It's can be, these laws can be very technical, and we walk through them. So I mostly want you to know that they're there for you, so your legal counsel, but lots of FAQs that are designed for people like you and me who want to read plain English and understand the rules, and lots of resources there for you. There's other organizations that are listed here. There's other law firms. Most states will have lawyers that specialize in these rules. Certainly there's Washington, D.C. lawyers by the truckload that understand these rules. And I will thank you very much. I want to leave it there, so if you want to take those resources down, and I'm glad to answer any other questions. Yeah.
So the Maryland Women's Health Association, we're all volunteers. Our board is all volunteers. Our executive committee is all volunteers. So if any of some of these are not as stringent in terms of keeping on, but we only have members of dollars, we don't have maybe $1,000 in grants or something. So what is probably the most important thing out of this that we need to be aware of as all volunteers?
Well, when I was involved in the California Public Health Association, I mean, I had my board of supervisors, county level, and my boss were really, really supportive of public health advocacy, and so I was allowed to use. I was paid to attend CPHA, and so I couldn't do lobbying, you know, in my quote volunteer time if I was billing my hours to the county board of supervisors. So you have to make sure that if people are volunteering, they're truly volunteering, and then if they do, you know, a day in Sacramento or a day in Baltimore, is that your state capital, and do the door knocking and actually do lobbying, they need to make sure they're doing that on their vacation time. So you just have to make sure that, you know, the work really is being done by volunteers at the time it's being done. Okay? Yeah.
For people who are at, like, lower levels in their organizations, like, I think some of these things are things that director could decide as an organization. They're going to figure out exactly what the rules are and proceed. But if you're at a lower level and you have, like, supervisors in the office who are very cautious and conservative and don't want to go there, can you give some tips on just how to be really safe as far as, like, doing it on your own time, using
You don't have to be vague about who you are. You don't have to deny who you are. But let me say a few things. One is, I would give the FAQs to your higher-ups. That's on our website, because we walk through things. And this, there are a lot of rules. It is confusing. And so some people say, listen, we're just not going to go there. But if they can become educated and demystify, that's what we try to do, is demystify the law so people can understand it. Rules, rules, rules. What are the few facts that you really, I mean, I've boiled this down, way down, to make it easy to be able to know where the bright lines are. And so we try to do that in our materials. I would encourage at least the FAQs, you'll see them there, to be read. So one thing is to see what you can do just within. Now, I don't know where you're from. I don't know the politics. Sometimes they are using their political judgment, and yep, I get it, and that's just not going to fly here, given there's no political will for this, and the little general fund money coming into the health department will be long gone the minute we open our mouth on this. Well, then that's a judgment call that nobody in my position can stand here and second guess, because I don't know the answers there, but I know that's the case in plenty of places. So that's where the coalition building, trying to change the political will outside of the government, so that you're working in an environment that's more conducive to this. If you are acting truly on your personal time, you do not have to deny who you are. In my private life, I work for so-and-so. My degrees are the following. My research has shown. You'd have to say, I'm not here on behalf of the government. I'm here because I'm a citizen of this town, this county, this state, and I have expertise that I want to share with you. I think you'd want to be careful to distinguish yourself, but you do not have to deny yourself.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if you are just presenting an issue or educating the person, it's
not lobbying anyhow.
So you can do it on your own time?
Yeah, if you want to lobby, if you want to lobby, you have to be careful. If you're just educating, you know, you're not allowed to go off and just educate people. You know, you all know I'm not getting into employment law here. You know, I don't want anybody getting fired because, well, he said I could lobby, but not on our time. You got to stay within the structures of the employment law, of your contract with your bosses. I'm not encouraging anybody to get themselves fired here, believe me. Yeah. I would really encourage, particularly for nonprofits, to go to the Alliance for Justice's Boulder Advocacy. There's a typo in that. I just noticed this when I was going through my notes. It's not Boulder like Boulder, Colorado. It's Boulder like we're being bold and strong. B-O-L-D, B-O-L-D, bold. Boulder Advocacy. The Alliance for Justice they specialize in nonprofit lobbying issues. And they're going to have the best resources of anyone. They haven't touched the federal appropriations with a 10-foot pole. Go to Change Lab Solutions for federal appropriations issues. This has been a total pleasure, and I look forward to any questions you might have one-on-one. Thanks.